Thank you for that. That was really very informative. So I'm Chris McGoy, and I'm from Montclair, New Jersey. And I just wanted to say, you know, there's this broader landscape in what's happening with schools, which is determining what is happening to every child now today. Mm-hmm. And I would say, from my point of view, that we are losing control of our schools. We no longer have a say in what our children are being taught to the degree we did before. Issues are being taken out of our hands. And why is this? You know, it's not a mystery. There are two pieces of legislation that I think everybody should know about. So in 2002, you probably have heard of No Child Left Behind. Hmm. Yeah, we're good? Yeah?
I'm sorry for interrupting.
That's okay. So you probably have heard of the No Child Left Behind Act. And No Child Left Behind had just a few pieces. I'm going to speak in a very broad brush, right? Under No Child Left Behind, every state had to develop standards. And then those standards were going to be tested, the children would be tested, data would be generated from those tests, and then certain sanctions would be levied against schools. So No Child Left Behind came to be known as Test and Punish. And the sanctions levied against the schools could be everything from, you know, an intervention to have a remediation and to fill certain achievement gaps to actually a taking of the school. And there were even percentages of how many schools could fall to the bottom of your portfolio every year and be under stress. The No Child Left Behind law said that by 2014, 100% of the children in all of the schools had to be proficient. This was not an achievable goal. I mean, if one kid throws up on testing day, you're killed, you know. You don't have 100% of the kids. So, you know, for many years, educators struggled with this. And we're hoping for relief. The law was not generating the kind of changes anybody would think. We kept to the standards, kept teaching kids, kept testing kids. By 2012, Massachusetts, which is often considered the best education state, you know, except this year it's New Jersey, Massachusetts had 80% of its schools under some form of sanction or another. Right, Massachusetts. So you can see how this scheme was not really reflecting what was going on in schools and was starting to drive a very unhealthy school atmosphere. When President Obama was elected, many people, including me, were very hopeful that the stringent No Child Left Behind would be changed in the legislature, you know, in Congress. That didn't happen. What did happen instead is that our Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, said, well, I'm going to give you waivers from No Child Left Behind if you do a couple things for me and attach some money to them. That's Race to the Top. And the things I'm going to do, you know, I'll give you the money, but this is what you have to sign on to. And you can read this. And I have a handout, and you can go to your home or your computer and click on it and read it. And the first thing you have to do is you have to sign up for the Common Core, right? And when Race to the Top was first issued, a lot of the states signed on before ever seeing Common Core because it wasn't done. So you have to sign on to the Common Core standards, number one. You have to, of course, then have a test that relates to the Common Core standards, and that here in New Jersey is going to be the PARC, right? And then that test is going to generate data, just like No Child Left Behind. But guess what? This time what we're going to do with that data, we are going to evaluate your teachers with it and your principals with it, and if they don't meet their achievement marks, we're going to get rid of them. We're going to fire them. And you have to create a method within your state. Every state kind of approaches slightly differently to evaluate your teachers according to the kid test scores, right? So here in New Jersey, this last year was 30%, and now we're going to go 10%, 20%, 30% of a teacher's evaluation will come from how her kids do or his kids do on the PARC test, right? And I know when I used to take my kids grocery shopping when they were little, and one of them would have a bad day and start screaming, and everybody would look at me like I was the worst mother in the world. You know, if anybody judged me on my kids' behavior that day, I would be in trouble. So, and I just want to say there are a lot of concerns. Statistical analysts have looked at these measures. They're called VAM. Here we call student growth objective. They are very problematical, and we have great bloggers and writers here, Bruce Baker, School Finance 101, Jersey Jasmine, you can read about it. They're very shaky. The evaluation is very shaky. Anyway, okay, so then the other thing we can do is you know, we can come in and we can take your school. And Race to the Top also said there's no caps on charter schools anymore. And Race to the Top said, and you have to keep this data stream that's going to follow the kids forever, right? You're going to keep a data stream on your children. And if you read the what it says, Race to the Top, you have to have an estate, a longitudinal data system. You have to have that. And we encourage you to have a horizontal data system, which means collect every piece of data you can and put it in. There's a lot of confusion about what data is being collected. I know up here in Ridgewood, you're going to have a whole nother symposium on student privacy and that data in December. So this is the framework now. So the kids in school right now, how we're having Common Core, it's because someone signed on to Common Core, right? And all you had to do to sign on to Common Core is your Department of Education head and your governor had to sign on to it. There was no discussion beforehand. There was no everybody looking at it. Let's all get together and decide how this is going to work. Let's get our boards of education and our superintendents and everybody and all our teachers. That didn't happen. So why is this so important? Because what's happening in education today is that a small group of people are deciding what is good for our children, how they want things to move. And they're deciding, what they believe is that it's test and punish. Or maybe they don't believe that. Maybe this is just a, you know, a scheme, right? A scheme that drives everything. So I just want to talk about two words. Oligarchy, I'm gonna talk about oligarchy and democracy, and equity. And I don't wanna get into a debate about what the standards are or what they say. People have many different opinions on that. So I don't wanna debate that, but I wanna talk about the development of the Common Core standards in light of those two words. So the Common Core standards, when they were developed, here's what happened. This guy, David Coleman, went with one of the chief state school officers to Bill Gates, and they said, you know what we'd like to do? We would like to develop this common set of standards, and we need somebody to pay for them. And Bill Gates said, okay, I'll pay for them. And they decided that they were going to do this totally off the books, totally outside of government. Now, why would you have to do that? Because the federal government, by law, cannot write standards. That's supposed to be left to the states. Education's supposed to be left to the states. So they said, this is how we'll get around it. And I call it off the books, you know, or you might call it like dark education, like they say dark money, you know? So they got together, they got, nobody really knows because it was a big secret, 26, 27 people together to write the standards. And the articles that I give you have all this in there. There were really no teachers in there. Maybe two of them had a little high school experience. Everybody was otherwise connected to a testing company, a data company. And they wrote what they thought were good standards. And they wrote the standards this way. Here's where we want the kids to end up in high school. We'll just kind of chunk them all the way down. So when they released the first draft of the standards, the childhood development specialists went out of their minds. They said, this is not physically appropriate for children. This is not developmentally appropriate for children. And they began to, 500 of the best childhood development specialists wrote a letter at the time, and nobody listened. And what happened instead of that was that these standards were then floated by larger bodies, and they got to sign off. Teachers got to lob in comments, never heard back what happened. And I think you know, because you had Sandra Stotsky up here, that the only two content experts for the standards, Sandra Stotsky and James Milgram, refused to sign off on them because they didn't like them, right? But now we're stuck with these standards. We're stuck with them. But because they were scalable, right, you could bring them to scale. You could make everything the same in every school across the country, that kids would be learning at the same rate, right? And this is the big word in education now. Can we bring it to scale? And equity, right? Equity is supposed to mean sameness. It's supposed to mean the same. We're on the same page at the same time doing the same standard to the same test. And how attractive is that to someone like Bill Gates? So how are we gonna do this? We're gonna test online. We're gonna keep the data online. Everybody's gonna have a Chromebook. You know, the materials are all going to be generated by Pearson. So we suddenly have, and when you can go online and watch Bill Gates say, the opening of markets. Never before have we had such a market in education. And I believe that what has happened is that this huge financial market. And this is how they talk about it, that education has become a huge financial market. Now, now you're bound. And so you can see how this oligarchy, right, influences. You can follow the money. Bill Gates himself, $2.3 billion has been sent to advertise the Common Core, place writing in the country, have groups to promote it, push it through teachers. Every time you turn around, you're hearing how fabulous this is, right? But it really has not undergone any examination by the public. I think we're starting to have trouble with it because it was never field tested. But if you go to your school board and say, "But you know what? This isn't working for me," what can your school board do? It's signed on by the state. It's signed, sealed, and delivered. So this is the context that we're facing in education now, you know, and we're facing the loss of our schools. I live in Montclair. Newark is just down Bloomfield Avenue from us, right? And Newark is marching down Bloomfield Avenue to Montclair. All of the people, all the reformers who work in Newark, they live in Montclair. People now who have been working in Newark, the PR representative for Cami Anderson, who shut down communications with the people of Newark, guess where he works now? In Montclair. We can't ask a question at a school board meeting. We do not get an answer. So what I want to close with is to say, we're in a framework where decision-making has been taken out of our hands. In this, we are all the same. If the people in Newark have no voice and their schools were taken long before, you know, race to the top, but if the people in Newark have no voice, if they have no local control, I want you to remember that you are rapidly moving into the same position. And I know that your local school boards want to be responsive, but their hands are tied too. So I urge you, it is time to get involved in the educational discussion, to understand that legislation must be changed, that government must be made, you know, to play its appropriate role, that local control has to come back. And I will close with reading you a very short bit. When I read it, I almost fell off my chair. I was driving in the car one day, I heard this on the radio on NPR, and I printed off the article. So in Kenya, there is a private school company that runs academies, Bridge International Academies. And they've set up over 200 schools in Kenya over the past 4 years. So let me read you this and see if it sounds like your schools now. To accomplish this, Bridge has set up a highly structured, technology-driven model that relies on teachers reading standardized lessons from handheld computers. The e-reader not only delivers the lesson script to the teachers, but it also acts as an electronic timesheet, gradebook, and supervisor. The tablet tracks what time the teacher arrives, what time she leaves, and how long she spends on every lesson. The administrative side of the school can be run off a smartphone. The exact same lesson being taught in this classroom is being taught in every other sixth grade class at Bridge schools across the country, says Bridge co-founder Shannon May. If you were at one of the other 200 locations right now, you'd be seeing the exact same thing, she says. In some ways, it is kind of the magic in it. That magic of standardized lesson plans changes the role of the teacher. It allows Bridge to hold down costs because it can hire teachers who don't have college degrees, TFA. Teachers are not content producers any longer, says May of Bridge Schools. So when we talk about equity in schools, we're talking about the children, we're talking about the teachers, we're talking about the administrators. So please get involved. You've got your great Ridgewood Cares About Schools, and let's hear what they have to say.